This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Bookmark on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Uma Pagan Ampike Pagan. Later this month, from the 20th to the 22nd of June 2014, Publica will play host once again to the Kuala Lumpur Festival. The festival, themed Fast, will bring together writers and thinkers and artists from all across the region and the world in an attempt to provide a fertile platform where discourse and debate can thrive. One of the featured speakers at this year's festival is renowned Singaporean poet, author, literary critic, and graphic novelist Dr. Gwee Lee Sui. His work, The Mist of the Stone, was the first full-length Singaporean graphic novel in English. Gwee, welcome to the show.
Hello, hi, Uma.
Talk to us about The Mist of the Stone. You published it 20 years ago when you were just 21 years old.
Well, yes, actually it's 21 years now, because this was published last year as a 20th anniversary edition.
Right.
Yeah, the book was, it came out when I was very young. It came out at a time when I was a university student, just fresh out of the army, Singapore Army, and doing my first year university, and I was looking forward to the long break. And then it suddenly struck me that it's going to be the first period of time when I had a long time, and I don't know what to do with it.
So you decided to write a book.
Yeah, I thought I might as well write a book. I mean, my friends are thinking of more practical things, of like going and find a job and, you know, earning some extra money to go on dates or something like this. But here I was, you know, I was thinking, no, yeah, why don't I just do the thing I've been doing when I was younger but didn't get a chance when I was in the army, which is to draw.
So it wasn't just write a book. You decided to write and illustrate it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't actually realize, I mean, people in Singapore don't actually realize that, even though they knew me for a while, that I actually began as an artist. I drew a lot in schools, and on that basis, I mean, I have been roped in for a number of publications that in school that deals with drawing and all. But after that, when I enter the army and I come out, and, you know, that part seemed to have kind of been left behind. And so people don't remember me for those, they remember me for my academic writings and my poetry. And The Myth of the Stone is something that, well, kind of get hidden, and the things I do for as an artist, that gets a kind of fine line hidden away for a long time.
Because it was out of print for a long time until it was republished last year for this 20th anniversary edition.
Yes, that's right. It's a long journey. I mean, this book took, because when it first came out, in itself, at that time, the market, Singapore, was not ready for graphic novels. At that time, people were into cartoons. I think they still do. And in a way, I think someone like Lard, for example, his stuff works great because it can be in two mediums. He works in cartoons. But if you look at Kampong Boy, it really is a graphic novel, you know. But at the time, because visually, I mean, that kind of way of seeing, telling a story isn't very conventional. It isn't something people are used to until, I think, a slightly later time. That book was kind of brushed aside, you know. I mean, I had problems trying to get a review from the newspaper. At that time, a review in the newspapers was very important, especially the Straits Times, because that would mean, and this was a pre-internet age.
Until you had a review in the Straits Times.
That's right. It doesn't exist. Nobody knows what is it about. Nobody knows how to come at the book if they've seen it in the bookshop. And so the book was actually in the bookshops, practically all the bookshops. But it's just sitting there, you know, and people don't know what to do with it because they have not seen a book like this where you have cartoons, but they go on and there are a lot of words. And it seems to be a tool. Too childish for an adult book and too adult for a children's book. So it's somewhere in the middle. People didn't know what to do with it, and because of it, the book suffered at that time.
Before we get into what The Mist of the Stone is about, tell me then, why do you think that happened? Why do you think, was it purely because the industry was not ready? Was it just ahead of its time? Because obviously Western audiences already had these kind of feature-length graphic novels, which went beyond comic books.
Yes, but even then, except for Europe, I think, even in the American market, it wasn't something that was big. Even though it existed, DC, Marvel, they only started to experiment with publishing a graphic novel, at least kind of a book-length, kind of trade paperback version of comics, in the late 80s onwards. And even then, they're just only simply collecting storylines, issues of comics, as opposed to having an original story just written specifically for a novel form. I think that came sporadically in Western market, but it's not as consistent as it is now. As a genre, I think it only took off in about the same time as Man for the Stone actually started. In fact, there wasn't a name called graphic novel for the longest time. People don't know what to call this. And for myself, I only treated it as a comic book, and I wasn't calling it a graphic novel at the time. I just wanted to write a story, and it just turned into a novel. It just went on for as long as it did, and that was what it was.
No, you're absolutely right. The idea of a graphic novel, per se, was a clever marketing ploy to get adults to buy comic books.
Yeah, that's right. And until today, I think we're still debating what to call the term, what to mean by the term graphic novel. You know, is it does it have to be a novel? Well, that's a dictionary meaning. But then you're faced with people who now do things like use it to to talk about science, the origins of the universe, and all that kind of things. And then you say, what is this? Is this still a graphic novel, or is it an illustrated book or whatever? And so the terms are still being thrown around now. So it's still, in that sense, a very new genre. If you want to think about that. You can consider a manga a graphic novel, but there are people who still debate that there is a difference between both. So again, questions about what the term means. So I think even 20 years later, you know, we have a clearer idea of this thing called graphic novel, but it still shows in the controversy we still have over the term that it is a very new genre.
Since it's republishing last year, from what I've read online, from the reviews I've read in newspapers, it seems that both Singaporeans and Malaysians have taken to the myth of the stone. There seems to be a renewed interest in it.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre because 20 years ago, I mean, I remember the reviews that I got from friends and from people who actually thought about it. It would be things like, you know, there's too much drawing, you know. You just tell us a story, or there is too much words, you know, just focus on drawings. So you get conflicting signals. People don't take it as a medium in itself that you can have words and pictures working together. That's one. And another one is like they think, you know, why do you want to tell a story like this? You know, why don't you tell a Singaporean story? You know, that's really quite irritating in as far as Singaporean literature goes. The people still have this conception that literature done by Singaporeans have to be about Singaporeans.
You know, the Orient.
About Singapore. Yeah, it has to be about a place. It has to be about issues, about the government or something like this. And a book like this that is set in a fantasy world, it becomes a problem because they really don't know what to do with it. And they think, oh, no, why are you doing this kind of thing? Shouldn't this be done by Westerners? You know, that's the concept at the time as well. You know, that strangely, kind of prejudice of sorts that, you know, you leave the fantasy science fi things to the international Western market. Locally, you focus on nation-building writing.
I only picked it up last year after the reissue because I hadn't heard about it before. I don't think many Malaysians would have.
I don't think a lot of Singaporeans heard about it.
But
I think a lot of poets, you know, they say, what, you did a graphic novel when you were in your 21? I say, yeah, nobody knew about it because after a while, I just decided not to talk about it because nobody knew about comics enough, and people who are literary don't actually have very high opinion about comics for a long time.
And that's so their loss, I tell you.
It. Yeah. So I it's just something I shove away. So I think in that sense that put me in a very unique position. I can see both from the perspective of people who love comics and have this popular taste, and then the literary so-called hive-looting taste that certain sectors have as well.
I've been reading it. I love it. But there are so many influences. You've got, you know, you seem to be influenced by Narnia, by Lord of the Rings, a little bit of Ramayana, a little bit of Eastern mythology thrown in. Just lay it out for us. I mean, what were your influences when writing this graphic novel?
Oh, man, I think all these influences, you just name them all. And some more, of course. Much to do with the fact that, when I was growing up, I was actually a very religious kid. I come from a Buddhist family, but then I converted to Christianity quite early. And then I started to read a lot into religion and all and what theology is about. And then that branched off. I started to read other religions. I started to read about mythologies around the world. And I got stuck in world mythologies for a long time. And all these things somehow, you know, swim around in the head and definitely go into this book. The other aspect, of course, as you have also mentioned, is those fantasy books. They are part of my childhood, I guess. I mean, I've read Hobbit, Lord of the Rings when I was much younger, and then I also have read the Narnia Chronicle, the Chronicles of Narnia, when, of course, the religious influence side of me have gone into that part. And the other writers, you know, tied to that circle. So those books certainly became part of my imagination, as well as all these other mythological influences that I have.
I'm speaking to a Singaporean author, poet, literary critic and graphic novelist, Dr. Gwee Lee Swee. He will be in KL later this month between the 20th and 22nd of June. For more information on the various panels and discussions he'll be involved in, check out www.kualalumpur.com. After this, we chat about some of those religious undertones in his book, as well as the current state of Singaporean literature and writing. You're listening to Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Bookmark on The Bigger Picture. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan, and today I'm speaking to Singaporean author, poet, literary critic, man of many talents, graphic novelist, Dr. Gwee Lee Swee. He'll be in KL later this month in conjunction with FAST, the Kuala Lumpur Festival, and we're getting you all warmed up for his visit with this little teaser of what he's all about. So, Gwee, we were talking about your graphic novel, The Myth of the Stone. You were very religious growing up, and I think when you read The Myth of the Stone, you can take it on a couple of levels. You can take it on a story, this adventure story of this young boy, much like the Chronicles of Narnia. If you read a little more into it, you will see many religious undertones as well. Was that something intentional? Did you think that would give it an appeal to a wider audience?
Well, it has that religious allegory that is working alongside as a kind of very loose frame. But when you read the story, I think people warm up to it on many levels. I think when I talk to the kids, for example, they actually don't see all these things. What they see is really a struggle of a boy that is quite like them, with issues of doubt, issues of greed, issues of cowardice. And so all these issues are tied into this boy. In fact, I told a story really about a kid who is really the worst kind of hero you can have for a story. He doesn't have all the heroic qualities. He's the absence of all this quality. He's as ordinary as you can get, I think, to anybody growing up in Singapore, where, you know, you have all these forces and then you're always having to defer to them. And yet there is also this part of you that wants to be independent and you want to assert yourself. And you do that by, you know, perhaps wanting a little bit of power. And so that kind of a strange mishmash of desires goes into this boy. And then he has to struggle a bit, of course. He has to learn how to be part of a world and be part of the good of the world by knowing where to stand and to stand on the side of good. That is actually a very basic universal lesson of this book. I hope I didn't really spell out the whole story too clearly.
It's okay, no spoilers, don't worry.
Yeah, I hope not. But that's a general trend. It's not a pessimistic book, but yet there's also a lot of problems. If you read it as a religious text, you'll see that also that it highlights a lot of problems with the kind of Christian religion I grew up with. I did struggle with the idea of a God who seems to know everything and yet allow us to go through a lot of bad things in life. And I hope that when I was writing this story, I had no idea how to solve this problem. I just want to present it as a world that has these qualities, and then the boy has to, through this, learn to be himself, to be the self that he ought to be in a world. I don't think I solved those issues. In fact, I think I highlighted a lot of problems with a theological world. And so in that sense, that book can be read on that level. But if to avoid those, you can simply actually treat it as a normal story, because a lot of kids seem to have picked it up and just left it up and enjoyed it on various levels. I think one of the strengths of the book is that there are a lot of friends, and I think kids like that, so that they have people to help them along in their working life.
Tell me though, I mean, we've all written things in our younger days. Now when you look back on it, when you look back at it going into this republishing of The Myth of the Stone, what do you think about that work? Are there things that make you cringe? Are there things that you change?
Uma, 20 years, I have been cringing many, many times. You know, it's a strange experience. I think if you have written a book and you have, put it aside for a while, you'll realize every time you go back to it, you either feel very proud of it or you feel very uncertain, very ashamed of it. And I've definitely swung between both extremes. I felt very bad about the book. I mean, as if I wish it wasn't out, it wasn't there. And then I sometimes feel like, wow, this book is actually saying a lot of things about me, about the world, that is deeper than what I can see right now. You know, and so between this, I don't know. I mean, after a while, I just decided that the book has a life of its own. It was something I produced at one time. That person is no longer me. But in many ways, I can still see myself continuing to that person. In this 20th anniversary edition that came out just last year, I tried to do that kind of revisiting. In that book, there are two new stories, which I added in as a way to tell the stories I couldn't tell because the book didn't sell well the first time around 20 years ago. And so I wanted to complete the story in that way, but by shrinking two previous books that I originally intended into just two short stories as a way to frame the book, but also as a way to show my own response to the original story as someone writing 20 years later. You know, and that, in that sense, I think that the book enriches me because I realized a lot of things about myself through my own writing 20 years ago, what must have been going through my head. And sometimes I feel, you know, I'm quite happy to have been that person because, you know, he must have been a very tortured person.
We're all tortured when we're 21, Gui. But, you know...
But in different ways.
In the afterword to this edition, you talk a little bit about how you imagine the publication to be more about more people discussing it. You seem to have imagined it giving birth to a greater conversation about the genre, about the story, about raising pertinent questions. 20 years on, do you find that's happening now?
I found it in a few people who have written on it online, and I'm actually very moved that they have given so much thought to what I'm doing there. I think in the 20 years, even though the book has gone silent in terms of print, yet there are people who managed to find the book somehow or have owned the book somehow and then come to write to me on emails. And they usually raise questions about with me. I mean, when they know who I am, and they say, are you the guy who wrote this book? I say, yeah, usually through email. And they will send me questions about the book. And I felt quite moved because people actually knew that there's something more to the book, that there's a simple story, but there's a lot of lurking issues underlying it. And they want to solve the mystery. I can't solve it because in many ways, I left that person behind maybe 10 or 15 years ago, that part of me that understood the book perfectly. But I also think that even then, that person needs to learn to let go of the book. Right now, I'm quite welcome. I'm quite open to people saying all sorts of things about the book, and they're probably right because I can't see the book as clearly as a lot of my own reviewers now.
And that's really good because you've also got a lot of distance between this you and the old you and the one that actually wrote the book.
Yes, yes. I think distance is good because in that way, I mean, it turned out to be good. But for a long time in those 20 years, I think I was quite upset by the fact that this book was something I couldn't acknowledge. It was there. I spent a good number of months doing it. And then it was not accepted well, and then it just disappeared. And then I see more in more recent times a lot of the new struggling artists coming out to do their graphic novel and with different measures of success. And nobody seems to have remembered what I've done then. Not that they should, but I wish I could share with them my own struggles and my own thoughts on doing graphic novel because I do know that some of them have issues with storytelling, for example, or even understanding the comic genre. I have since tried my best to understand the genre more and more because Myth of the Stone is not just my first graphic novel, but it's actually the first graphic novel I own because I didn't come from a rich family. So in that sense, when I was young, I usually borrow my comics from friends. So one of the stupid things I did with Myth of the Stone is actually to write my own graphic novel because, you know, it's better than having not having the money to buy one. And so after that, when I started to work, actually specifically the money I got from Myth of the Stone the first time around, the publishers did pay me a certain sum of money at first before they went bust later on. But with that money, I did buy some comics, and that started a collection that is now exploding in my house. So in many ways, the book kick-started my ownership of more comics, more graphic novels.
So tell me, Gwee, you mentioned earlier in the show about this notion that many Singaporeans have about what Singaporean literature should be. It's a shared notion that many Malaysians have as well, this idea of what is a Malaysian book? Why are you writing that story? Why aren't you writing one of our stories? Yeah. Surely we have enough stories to tell.
You have that right as well in Malaysia.
Oh, so much of that goes around. Tell me, has that changed since the time you published Myth of a Stone 21 years ago? Or are they still having those conversations as to what qualifies as a Singaporean book? And a foreign book.
It's definitely moved on. I remember in the 90s, you know, people get very obsessed with not just, okay, firstly, the idea is that there is the high literature and there's a low literature. Basically, we are in Singapore very impatient. We're trying to make it there in the world of literature. And so the focus, whenever there is one on like high poetry, high drama, high novels. In that sense, those that are so-called open brackets, close brackets, literary. You know, they want that kind of writing. So the other kind of writing just disappears. They may be popular, but people don't talk about it academically. They don't get that much, a thumbs up from critical spheres. So in that sense, those other kind of writing disappears, or they don't get attention, and so people stop or don't write about it, or can't find a publisher, and all sorts of reasons. Because of that, I think a lot of literature went missing in Singapore in literary history. We don't have the resource to talk about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of seemingly literary writing. Things have definitely changed now. I think you stand a higher chance of getting, let's say, a sci-fi book out. Not to say that there will be publishers who will do this regularly. It will still be something that they are quite conservative about.
Right.
They're quite sure that, even not just Singaporeans, but internationally speaking, unfortunately, readers are interested in Singaporean books insofar as it talks about Singapore or about something that sounds exotic about Singapore.
Usually set during the war involving Japanese people.
Yeah, exactly. And usually a woman protagonist or something like this, you know.
Yeah.
Or something like this. And this kind of stuff, it gets lapped up internationally. Unfortunately, publishers are aware of that. And of course, certain publishers try to not entirely pay attention to that, but understand that there is a certain level of helping the readership here develop. And so they try to have a range of things happening at the same time, not just genres, but also different kinds of thematic issues are being discussed in the work of literature, and so that in a sense is good. For example, Myth of the Stone would have been easily published today, in a way that it would never. It had so much difficulty 20 years ago. I didn't raise the point that it was sitting in my drawer for a year before I could find a publisher to get it out.
When it comes to publishing in Singapore, the literary scene seems very vibrant. When I walk into stores like Books Actually or many of the independent bookstores, there seems to be more and more Singapore writers, Singapore poets out there. Is it good? As in, are their works worth reading? I mean, is that what you're saying? Or is it still a mixed bag?
Yes, it's a mixed bag, but it's not a bad thing. In a way that, it's always good to have more writers, more people writing, more people daring to take the time out to write and to know that, life is not about just trying to earn as much money. It's about how you live it. And if you feel there's something in you that wants to write a story, take a year break, 2 year break, write your story. And then if you want to go back to your job later on, fine. If you want to stay writing for the rest of your life, go on. People ought to be a bit more open-minded about choices in life and what life is about. And so in that sense, I think we have definitely moved on. A lot of the young people have coming out to write more and more. I hope they keep on writing. They don't stop. I hope they don't think publishing one book is an end, and it's something you kind of tick off your things to do list for life and then go on to do other things. Of course, that exists. That kind of people exist. But we hope writers would, through their publishing, realize that, it's something part of them and they want to go on and explore that. But in terms of quality, well, that is more an issue. this kind of explosion of writing, I think it becomes a mixed bag, as you say. There can be very poor writing that nonetheless get published, and very good writing that nonetheless don't get attention. So you get a whole spectrum. And it's not necessarily bad, because, you know, if it's a good writing and it doesn't get discovered now, it doesn't mean that sometime later someone will not realize that this is something that came out and was great.
What about you? I know you're working on a collection of poetry that's coming out soon. Any yes. temptation to go back into this graphic sphere?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm trying to get rid of, that's not the right word to use, but I'm trying to be done with my poetic side of me, and then return to a second graphic novel. That is something I definitely want to do now that I'm entirely out of academia, to return to my comic side. I've done a few sketchings here and there, and I've also been doing pages for other people for fun. But I've already made plans for the next thing to happen. I just need to sit down sometime in the second part of this year and then start to draw again.
All right, Gui, we look forward to seeing you in KL in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much for your time.
I hope to come down soon and really enjoy my time in KL.
Fantastic. I've been speaking to Dr. Gui Li Sui, Singaporean author, poet, literary critic and graphic novelist. Like what you hear, well, you'll be able to catch him in KL from the 20th to the 22nd of June at the Kuala Lumpur Festival. You can find out more at kualalumpur.com. You've been listening to Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.